In the same way one might fill an orb if they'd carried volts in their skin. 1, 10, 30, 50 orbs, all filled. He handed her back the bag, looking as grey as the members of the Phoenix Club. She literally held his life in her hands.
The orbs empty after their bet, so if you bet all the orbs, Levi will die, Semper told her. The game will last 3 hours. If you've failed to collect the 22 shadow cards by that time, the orbs will deactivate, and he will also die.
En tried to catch Levi's eye, but his gaze was fixed on the stack of shadow cards. Semper set a metal timer the size of a mousetrap on the table, its clockwork and wires visible, as if inside out. Each round he would deal the players as many regular cards as there were bets. 8 cards for 8 players betting, for example. From there, those players competed for the card up for grabs that round. Everyone played 1 card per trick until they ran out, and the highest card of the trick collected the others. Whoever ended with the smallest number of spades won the round, and the shadow card. Ties were decided by dice. Semper shuffled the normal deck. It thump-thumped on the table.
There's one other catch, he said.
Of course there was.
The shadow cards, once the game begins, develop divination properties. When they touch your skin, you'll see a flash of your life according to the card. What has already happened, or perhaps what could have happened, had you made different choices.
Levi finally looked at her. She held his gaze, her heart lodged in her throat, and silently told him that she could handle this, that it would be okay, that he had more than 3 hours left. But the fear on his face remained. She wouldn't have believed herself either.
What's the point of the divination? She asked Semper.
To remind the players of the stakes.
As if they needed reminding that they were about to die. It didn't matter that Levi's life was the one at play. The Phoenix Club would certainly never let her leave the house alive when this was over.
You may pick up your cards,
Semper instructed. He slapped his hand on the timer, which jolted to life. Tick, tick, tick. En grabbed her 2 shadow cards. As soon as she touched the top one, an image filled her mind, momentarily ripping her away from the room. She was in the dining room of her Bellamy house, and she stared up the stairwell at the first door. Lord's office, always locked. The house felt crowded with secrets. The vision changed. She was slightly older, wearing a deep burgundy gown and waiting in a queue. Someone announced the name of the girl in front of her. When he called En's name next, En glided down the white-carpeted steps and entered a glittering ballroom. Finally, Lady Ariane Abacus Salter. The room returned. En gasped and, after a few moments, shakily lifted the shadow cards. The first was the moon, which had given her the memory of her home. The second was the chariot, which had shown her entrance into society after graduation. That wouldn't ever happen now. Lady Ariane Abacus Salter. She couldn't even truthfully claim that name anymore.
My life will literally flash before my eyes, she realized.
The all-encompassing nature of the visions reminded her of the black-and-white hallway from her dreams. Maybe whatever mysterious forces that enveloped the House of Shadows were also responsible for how Levi and En shared that place. She didn't think she'd learn the answer now. Semper flipped over the first shadow card up for grabs. It was the Empress. 8 people put in an orb, including her. The hand Semper dealt her was almost all high cards, and from what she remembered about the rules, that wasn't a good sign. But she hadn't understood much from his explanation. Semper played his first card, a 3 of spades. She used her lowest spade, the jack. Of course, that turned out to be the highest card, and she took all of the cards, including 5 spades. That was 5 strikes. At the end of the round, she had more spades than anyone, which eliminated any chance she might have of collecting the Empress. She could almost feel Levi's anguish from across the table. 3 people had collected 0 spades, and they rolled the dice to determine who won the round's shadow card. 1 orb missing. 49 left. 5 rounds went by.
She played four and lost them all. Tick, tick, tick.
Semper flipped the lover's card. N placed her bet, and to her luck and surprise received almost all low cards. She managed not to collect any spades and won the prize. As soon as she took it, an image appeared. She was in Levi's bed, lying on her back, the top buttons of her blouse scandalously undone, her hair draped over his pillow. He was on all fours over top of her, his lips pressed against her chest. She sighed and breathed in the smell of his cologne, playing with the hairs at the nape of his neck. His hand traced from her shoulder down her arm, until his fingers interlaced with hers. He lifted her arm above his head, pressed his stomach against hers, breathed her name into her ear. It was a very sweet surrender. With her free hand, she tilted his face to meet hers, raised her head to meet his lips. It was over. Her cheeks must have been furiously red, since Semper smirked as he flipped the next card. Levi gave her a faint, congratulatory smile for winning the round, but his expression also seemed to ask, "What did you see?" She was obviously flustered. She looked away, sure he could read the embarrassment and truth in her eyes. They'd been pushing the boundaries of their relationship since she'd arrived. Her body still burned at the thought of what might have been, but she forced the lingering thoughts of the illusion from her mind. She needed to focus. Five more rounds passed. She bet only once, during a round where not many others did, since her chances of winning would be highest. And lost. Tick, tick, tick. An hour went by. Two more remained to collect 19 cards. She bet on the next five hands and won two, the Wheel of Fortune and Death. First she saw herself stabbing the syringe into Cedric's leg, every moment of the scene as real and bloody as it had been earlier that night. When the image changed, she was collapsed in Bianca's office, the Donna watching apathetically as the Omerta drew out her last breath. Tick, tick, tick. By the end of the second hour, she'd won four more shadow cards, which meant she had 1 hour left to win 13. Before, Levi wouldn't look her in the eyes. Now he looked nowhere else. He crossed and uncrossed his arms, tapped the table, shifted in his seat, cracked his neck, all while keeping his gaze locked on hers. She knew she was losing. He knew she was losing. She couldn't say anything because she told Semper that she didn't know him, but she wanted to scream, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry!" His eyes told her he wanted to say the same. She bet on the next card. Semper seemed to take an eternity to deal their hands, and she wondered if he was moving slowly on purpose. With over two dozen of her orbs already played, Levi looked much less himself. His dark skin was growing increasingly transparent, and a whiteness was seeping the color out of his brown eyes. Anne was going to have to sit here for 55 minutes and watch him die. The thought made her shake with panic. She tied with another woman for the next shadow card. The woman rolled first, an 11. Anne watched Levi as she tossed the dice, refusing to look at the number. He smiled slightly, and she knew she'd won. Then she looked at the dice. A 9. She'd lost. His smile had been for comfort. Soon she'd lose the entire game, and it would be her fault both of them would die. Had she not been here, Levi would have played himself, and then he would have stood a fighting chance. All that bravado about trying to save him the way she should have saved Lords, she'd only made everything worse. Tick, tick, tick. 50 minutes left. She refused to let them die because the timer ran out. If this was their end, it would be only after she took a chance and bet everything she had and never stopped trying. Semper turned over the next card. The World. She was the first to place in her orb. Semper was second. She looked around and realized that there were three people already out of orbs, and the rest were observing indifferently. Their lives weren't on the line. They already knew that she'd lose. Only two players remained in the round. Semper played a 4 of hearts, and she played her 3. All she had was the ace of spades, which meant if he played any spade,
She'd lose because she'd have the highest card and would be forced to take them both. He played the six of diamonds. Then he took her ace of spades, and she took the world. Upon touching the card, the sensation came suddenly, inexplicably, and all at once. A pain radiated across her chest, starting in her heart and seeping through her veins. She felt feverish, hyper-aware of every pulse of her blood, every churn of her insides. When she closed her eyes and tried to determine the pain's source, she had the eerie feeling that there was another presence inside her, a silhouette lurking inside the edges of her mind, something that hadn't been there before. As the pain gradually faded, she became aware of a change in the room. Nearly everyone present was still and lifeless, yet she felt a cold energy in the air. There were threads everywhere. They weren't something she could feel or see in a literal sense, but something she still understood was there. They hummed against the shadow cards, against the black orbs, against the timer. They circled around each of the player's wrists, binding them, all of them but her. Even though the threads weren't connected, they all felt as though they were part of the same fabric, different strings of the same piano. And the game, she realized, was the song. She nervously placed the world with the other shadow cards she'd won. Whatever had happened, whatever she'd thought she could sense, she must have been imagining it. She was at a breaking point of fear and nerves. For a moment, she'd cracked. In 48 minutes, when the timer rang, Levi would die, and so would she. She needed to hold herself together. She ignored the strange sensation and returned her focus to the game. Levi blinked a few times, and by the way he did it, Anne thought he was trying to tell her something. A signal. He rubbed his eyes repeatedly, but she'd stopped paying attention. Semper had flipped over the next card, and she was determined to win it. Much of her panic from earlier was gone, replaced solely with resolution. She won the next six shadow cards. Tick, tick, tick. 28 minutes left. More people joined in, but only a few. Most were out of orbs. They must have all started out with different amounts. N had 16 orbs left, and even in the near darkness of the room, she could tell Levi looked within inches of death. His skin reminded her of wax paper, and all his veins showed through, particularly around his eyes. The next round went by, and she was the only player to bet. Semper already owned that shadow card. It automatically went to her. Then three people bet. N won again. Tick, tick, tick. She lost the next. Tick, tick, tick. And won the one after. Tick, tick, tick. 20 minutes. She still needed four cards. Tick, tick, tick. But she was almost there. She was almost there. There were five players left, including Semper and her. The other three played every single hand. They must have believed that there was a chance that N would win. She won the next card. 15 minutes left. And the next. 12 minutes left. Then she lost. 8 minutes left. She won. 3 minutes left. Only N and Semper still had orbs to bet. He flipped the hanged man, but they both already owned that, so he flipped another. They both owned that one too, and another, and another. It seemed that they were after the same card. Tick, tick, tick. The devil. When he reached it, there was only 1 minute left. She couldn't lose. The presence in her mind, the one she'd imagined, felt larger and more imposing. All the threads in the room hummed. The song was reaching its final movement. Semper dealt them two cards each, moving slowly, so slowly, and she wanted to strangle him. She was so anxious and frustrated. He was trying to stall. He played his first card, a four of spades. She had to follow suit, and the only spade she had was a jack. Which meant she'd lost. She'd lost, and now they would both die. Because not only would Semper have all the cards and win the game, but the timer would inevitably run out. Only 28 seconds left. If she played her card, she'd watch Levi die. If she did nothing and waited, she'd still watch Levi die. 24 seconds left. She could... 17 seconds left. She needed time to think. Just for a second, just to get her bearings straight and stop the game and tell Levi that she was sorry and... Stop the song, whispered the presence in her head. Stop the song. Stop the song. It was her own voice, her own sense of self-preservation speaking. The threads hummed around her, binding everything but her. If she listened closely to the song, she could almost hear the notes skipping. Something was wrong with its tune. The game wasn't as it was before. The rules were broken in a way they weren't before. 10, 9, 8. She reached into her pocket. 7, 6. She pulled out the revolver. 5. She stood and pointed the gun at Malcolm Semper. Her chair screeched like the cries of someone waking in their coffin. 4. The women gasped. The man beside N leapt up to knock her over, but her finger was already on the trigger, and she fought to keep her balance. 3. Stop the song, it screamed. 2. N obliged. 1. The gun fired. The bullet smashed the timer into 100 pieces of clockwork, and all at once, the threads silenced. The song cut off. The man forced her down, and her chest slammed on the table. She gasped as his weight crushed the air out of her lungs. Someone ripped the gun from her hand. It was Levi. Semper reached to flip over his last card and win the game. No! N shouted. Levi pointed the gun at Semper's head and shot. Screams, the sound of chairs scraping the wooden floor. N's ears were ringing from the sound of the gunfire. She craned her neck, searching for Levi. The table jolted as Semper's body hit it. That was for Lords, Levi whispered. And she loved him for it. With her cheek pressed against the black felt of the table, N stared at two things. The lifeless eyes of the man who'd killed her family, and the devil card soaking in the devil's blood. Levi.
Don't mucking move!
Levi shouted, pointing the gun around the room. The Phoenix Club watched him with wide, dead eyes and remained motionless. You couldn't kill them with time, but you could kill anything with a bullet.
Put the gun down, Josephine Fennis said calmly. Too calmly.
He'd just shot the Chancellor of the whole Republic right in front of her, and he would happily shoot her next. He certainly wasn't calm.
Let her go,
Levi ordered the man pinning N against the table. The man raised his arms and then hurriedly straightened. Her eyes, once brown, were now blazingly violet. Her aura, too, had shifted from swirls of dark blue to a violent storm of purple and silver, deepening the original smells of coffee and bourbon with hints of gunpowder. Auras weren't supposed to change. It was dark enough in the room that he doubted anyone else had noticed her eyes during the game. But now the two of them held their full attention. He needed to get N out of here before anyone figured out who and what she was.
Seance, Levi said, even if the name sounded shat. Go stand by the door.
N did as instructed, and Levi's shoulder relaxed once she was safely tucked into the corner, far enough away that the Phoenix Club wouldn't see her miser eyes. Levi reached for the remaining black orbs and returned their energy to his body. He didn't feel any different afterward than he had before. Exhausted, the blood pumping so slowly inside him that his gears felt stuck together. Most of his life energy, whatever that was gone. He wondered how long it would take to regenerate, if it ever did. Levi backed toward the door. Every part of him ached, but muck, it felt good to move. He didn't think he'd walk again.
We'll only find you again, Josephine said matter-of-factly. You can't run from us.
From the moment Levi left this room, he would be a real criminal. He'd always been a cheat, but he'd never caused enough trouble that he'd needed to hide. Starting tonight, he would be a wanted man. Wherever he ran, the Phoenix Club would follow. Gabrielle Dondelier had lasted only a few hours. Ben grabbed his arm reassuringly. "We're leaving." She opened the door, pulled Levi into the stairwell and slammed it closed. They raced downstairs, a feat nearly impossible for Levi in his current state. Besides his multiple injuries, his body was 3/4 of the way to death. En had to prop his arm around her shoulder just to keep him upright.
"En,"
he hissed frantically in her ear as she helped him down the steps.
"If we see anyone at all, you need to close your eyes."
"What do you mean?"
"They're purple."
She tensed, but didn't look as shocked as she should have. What had happened to her during the game? Did they see?
"I don't think so. We'll talk about it when we're alone."
Once they made it out of here. This had been the room with the dancing girls, but now it was empty. Behind them, laughter and music echoed, coming from somewhere deeper in the house. En pulled him through an archway. The next room smelled strongly of Mistress's signature sweet smoke, and a few men slept on the floor. They didn't stir as Levi and En dashed toward the exit. This was too easy. They had simply let them escape. Did the Phoenix Club believe the House of Shadows to be that well protected, or that they'd meet their fates by the end of tonight? En swung open the front door, and Levi took a deep breath of fresh air and tried to push his anxieties away. Then he tripped over the body. He crashed down, knocking his head on the man's shoulder with an agonizing whack. En landed face first on Levi's back. Her knee jammed painfully into his wounded leg, and he let out a long, stifled curse.
"Sorry, sorry,"
she said, scrambling up. Levi stretched himself onto his knees, then nearly let out a scream. He was face to face with Shark, the man who had beaten him in the basement. Blood had pooled over the concrete step, trickling down from the bullet hole in his forehead.
"Muck!"
He reached for En's hand and nearly jumped to his feet. He'd accidentally laid his palm in the blood, and he hurriedly wiped away the red on his pants, feeling ill.
"I forgot he was here," En murmured.
"How long has he been here?"
"Since I arrived."
"Since you... you shot him?"
She nodded, her face grim. "Let's go." Levi bent down and carefully removed his pistol from Shark's pocket and shoved it into his own. If they were going to survive the rest of the night, they both needed protection.
"Let's go,"
he breathed, reaching shakily for En's arm to steady him. Together they raced across the front lawn and the woods adjacent to the estate's long driveway, toward the glittering skyline of New Rains. They could still faintly hear the ghostly music from the House of Shadows in the air. Levi shivered. Tonight, they'd been the entertainment. They made it to the main road and waited several moments, hoping for a carriage or motor car to pass by, so they could beg a ride. None did.
"It's a long walk back to the city," En said, her voice hitched. "They've probably already called the White Boots. They'll know we can't have gone far."
He felt her trembling beneath him.
"We could take them all. No one takes them all," Levi said, never so eager to ride the subway in his life.
If they kept running, they'd find a station within a few minutes.
"The White Boots will look there,"
she answered. She placed a hand on her forehead, breathing deeply, trying to steady herself. The cool nighttime wind, the agony of every step, the adrenaline of nearly dying. Their reality crashed over him all at once, and Levi let out a manic laugh.
"Maybe we should consult your guidebook. What does it say to do in this situation?"
Unamused, En grabbed his arm and yanked him down the street. He tried to keep up, but it was almost impossible to run. Standing up alone was a struggle, and the pain from his broken ribs and dislocated shoulder were enough to make him faint.
"It says we change our clothes and call Vianca," she hissed.
"Good plan."
They ran for a few more minutes before they reached the eastern edge of the factory district, even beyond the realms of Scarland. Levi couldn't remember the last time he'd been so far from downtown. They crept down an alley between two apartment buildings. En pointed to a clothesline several floors above them, and started toward a metal escape stairwell.
"Wait here," she whispered,
unwrapping his arm from around her shoulder. Levi nodded, doubting he could make such a climb in his condition. He slumped onto the ground and leaned his head against the wall. The alley reeked of garbage and the odors of the Brint, and very faintly in the distance he heard the calls of sirens. They were probably meant for them. He was exhausted. He was beaten. He was light-headed. Even though he should have been focusing on their escape, his thoughts jumbled together, and he fixated on only one question. Gabrielle Dondelet had only lasted hours. How much longer until the Phoenix Club found them? N returned with several articles of clothing. She tossed him a shirt that was clearly several sizes too large. "Get dressed," she commanded. "And turn around." He raised an eyebrow. They were in far too much of a rush for modesty. But still, he stood up painfully and faced the wall, hyper-aware of the approaching sirens, hyper-aware of N in some state of undress behind him. Both of these thoughts made his heart pound. "Those look terrible," N said from behind him. He realized she was looking at the swollen bruises on his back. He shot her an annoyed look over his shoulder. Hurt as he was, he couldn't change as fast as her. He was wearing very little.
"I don't remember giving you permission to peek."
She flushed indignantly. "I thought you'd be done. Now hurry up, we need to find a payphone." He grumbled and pulled up the two big pants. N was dressed in trousers, a checkered men's button-up, and a pair of socks. Her dress and heels were discarded on the ground.
"I know that dress,"
he said, managing a smirk. She'd obviously pulled it from his closet.
"You wear new reins well."
Her blush deepened, but after he finished dressing, she propped his arm over her shoulder again. "Come on." They hurried out of the alley, away from the direction of the sirens. N pointed ahead, where a yellow phone booth stood below a street lamp. They raced toward it.
"Do you have vaults?" he asked.
"Yeah." She rooted around her pocket, pulling out a tube of lipstick, the gun and the silk mask. All the girly necessities, apparently. Finally, she pulled out a small orb, bright with vaults. They slid into the phone booth. N held the orb up to the meter, and Levi stood behind her. There wasn't much space, so his chest was pressed against her back. He coughed awkwardly and drummed his fingers against the metal counter, waiting for her to suggest he wait outside. She never did. Outside, the distant sirens approached. They didn't have much time.
"Is it safe to call the phone operator?" she asked hurriedly.
He reached over her to the number pad.
"The younger has a private line."
After he dialed the numbers, N held the phone up to both their ears. He held his breath, listening to the ringing. N's face was only inches from his. He stared at all the strands of hair that had fallen from her bun and now draped across the slopes of her neck and shoulders. She had goosebumps, he noticed.
"This is St. Maur's Casino, Bianca Augustine's office,"
the secretary answered.
"We need a motor car,"
N said frantically.
"At the..."
She squinted at the mole station outside.
"Paydale Station."
"Who's this?"
"It's us," Levi growled. "We need a car."
Oh, yes, I'll tell her.
"And send another car to Luckluster Casino,"
N told her.
"There'll be a girl there, tall, fair skin, top hat, black laced boots. She'll be looking for us."
"Yes, I'll let her know."
N hung up.
"I hope Lola's still there, but it's been hours." "I'm sure she's fine, even if she's gone."
Levi held his breath. Bent over like he was, his mouth was awfully close to her neck. He cleared his throat.
"We need to find somewhere to wait."
A place where there wasn't negative space between them, and where they wouldn't be so exposed. Levi opened the glass door and stumbled out. They stood on a strip of sidewalk that cut down the middle of a street, forking on either side. The shops around them were closed, metal security doors down and locked. With nowhere else to wait, they climbed down the steps of the adjacent mole station and collapsed in a corner, close enough to the exit to still hear the sirens and faint noise of the city, but deep enough inside to remain out of sight. Both of them panted.
"How long will we wait, do you think?"
she asked.
"Maybe 30 minutes. We're a long way from St. Maur's."
She cringed and their eyes met. Anything could happen in 30 minutes. They could be dead in 30 minutes. Swallowing down his panic, Levi stretched out his legs and winced at the burning in his muscles. They sat shoulder to shoulder, legs out. N, he realized, was barefoot, except for her socks. Her hand was outstretched beside him.
"We will survive this together," he thought,
sliding his hand toward hers. But taking it would be as much for comfort as it was for desire. They were on a run for their lives. Temptation never came at the proper time. A rumbling filled the halls as a train sped through the tunnels below.
"My eyes," she whispered. "How am I supposed to hide them?"
She locked her gaze with his, and again he was taken aback by how changed her face looked, how her aura had once smelled of a gambler's ruin, but now also smelled of smoke. How very difficult it was not to kiss her.
"You're in luck," he said, shifting nervously, knowing he should put more distance between them.
He didn't.
"Because it so happens that I have the world's most uncomfortable pair of blue contacts in my pocket this very moment. Perfect for concealing royal lineages and cheating during card games."
"You're mucking with me," she said, eyes narrowed. "You're doing that face."
"What face?"
"That smirk of yours."
He reached into his pocket and pulled out the case of contacts.
"I can make you better ones at some point. These will do for now."
"Why do you have these?"
"A series of very poor decisions. Just put them on."
She walked to the nearest advertisement on the wall and studied her reflection in the tarnished glass.
"I don't even look like me."
Her voice was a mix of both wonder and bitterness. As En struggled to put on the contacts, Levi once again contemplated whether this was his last chance. The sirens outside echoed into the night, and when Levi closed his eyes, he still heard the sound of the gunfire that had ended the shadow game. It would be easy. He would beckon her closer, grab her hands and close the distance between them. If not for her, he would have died tonight, and he would have died alone. If death was still their fate, then why shouldn't he kiss her just like he wanted, just like he knew she wanted too? In Luckluster, he'd seen his desire reflected in her eyes. They might have survived the game, but who was to say they would survive the night? They had always been in this together. But as she turned to him, her purple eyes now concealed with blue, a fear settled in Levi's heart. She'd poisoned the most powerful don on the north side. She recited street rules to herself. She was the daughter of a notorious arsonist, raised by a woman who'd lived a life within the shadows. She was a miser. She was impossible. They very well might die tonight, but the real danger stood only an arm's length away. He could kiss N in hopes of surviving the night, or he could let go of his desire in hopes of surviving tomorrow. "How do I look?" she asked. He swallowed.
"You look different, but the purple is gone."
She took an unsteady breath and sat down beside him.
"Do you feel different?"
he asked quietly. "I feel..." She shook her head. "It sounds sort of shats, honestly."
"Try me."
"I had the gun with me the whole game, of course," she explained. "But I couldn't reach for it. Semper said something about the game binding the players the moment we entered the house, so no cheating was allowed. But as soon as I touched the world card, everything changed." Levi nodded. That was the moment he'd first noticed the new colors of N's aura. "It was like I could see the magical threads of the game, holding it all together, playing a song. And there were no more threads around me. And I could feel... can still feel this presence in my head, something that wasn't there before." Levi's skin prickled. Every word she said reminded him how much danger they were in, how dangerous she was.
"You're absolutely right," he said,
trying to sound teasing when really he was terrified.
"You sound shots."
She shoved him in the shoulder. "You should be nice to me. I can make volts now, or however miser powers work.
And you should stop hitting me. I'm more wounds than person."
She reached out and brushed the bruise on his neck, gently enough that it didn't hurt. "These aren't from Chez," she said softly. "These are new." The memory of his last encounter with Chez returned to him, leaving a foul taste in his mouth.
I saw Chez tonight, too.
Her eyes widened. Did he try to challenge you again?
Not exactly. I started it, and I also ended it.
Levi clenched his fist. He wished he could guess whether or not Chez was still alive, but he truly had no idea. He'd never meant to go that far. You don't have to tell me, she murmured. But there was nothing else to tell. She understood, and he could already see the unease on her face. It was the same unease he felt when looking at her.
Tell me about what happened tonight. Everything before the game, like...
He reached into her pocket and pulled out the mask.
Where did you find this? Not really something ladies just carry around with them.
N snatched the mask from his hands. There was an incident of sorts at Scrap Market. She told him the story. How Lola had changed her mind about N and about the oath. How she'd come up with the name Seance, taken from one of Lord's older pseudonyms. Then the story continued. How Bianca had called her into her office. How N had found Lola and stolen a car. How the Bloodgazer gave her the poison N brought with her to Luckluster. At some point during her tale, she rested her head on Levi's shoulder. He struggled to pay attention to anything other than the way her body felt pressed against his, and his attempt to forget his desire became a muddled afterthought. He wondered if she knew what she was doing to him. I woke up in Cedric's motor car outside of the House of Shadows, she said. The words gradually sank in.
He drugged you. Did he hurt you?
Only a little. I killed him before he had the chance to do more. Cedric Torrin was dead.
What?
He asked, even though he'd understood her perfectly. His mind spun. This changed everything. The Torrin family was without a Don. The upcoming election was without a candidate. The North Side had one less monster on its streets. You already know I had to kill the guard, too. The one who opened the door, N continued. I keep waiting for everything to hit me, but I don't feel bad. I don't even feel like I should.
I killed the Chancellor,
Levi whispered, only just remembering now, as they confessed their sins in the dark. That would change everything, too. N gave Levi's shoulder a gentle but comforting squeeze. He was a terrible man. Even so, Levi had never killed someone before. He'd never thought of himself as a killer. That was Ivory. That had been Eight Fingers, but not him. He felt like he'd been stained in some uncleansable way, that the person he was before was somehow purer than the person he was now. He didn't mourn the Chancellor, but he mourned himself. The chorus of sirens outside grew louder. Several cars were speeding through the streets above, searching for them. The two held their breath as the sirens passed by the station. They'd been lucky in their hiding spot for now, but soon their luck might run out.
The Unker's motor car should be here soon, he whispered,
hoping to reassure himself as much as her. Even in the dark, she looked pale. What if the White Boots come and we need to run? We told Bianca this is where we'd be.
I told you, no one takes them all. They'll never find us here.
She pressed her hand over her heart. Don't joke. I'm actually terrified.
So am I. That's why I'm joking.
There were footsteps on the stairs at the station. Levi and N immediately stood up and backed into the corner. N pressed against him as they each pointed their guns at the mouth of the stairwell. Levi bit his lip to silence his breathing. He could feel N shaking. She reached for his hand, and he squeezed it.
Together,
he whispered. The woman who appeared, however, wasn't a White Boot. She also brandished a gun, but she relaxed when she saw them. You're here! She was dressed like one of Bianca's typical gangsters, a fedora hat and a tight pinstripe dress. We need to hurry. The White Boots are already at St. Morse. Relief washed over him. They wouldn't die, not here, not yet. Levi slid away from N and lowered his gun. He took a shaky step toward their savior.
Then where do we go?
He asked. Oh, we're going to the casino. We're just not walking through the front doors. N. N had never been so grateful to step out of a motor car. She and Levi had spent the entire 30-minute ride crouched in the back seat beneath blankets, jostling painfully each time they'd skidded around a turn, holding their breaths each time a siren passed. They were parked in front of a den called the Palace, but the majesty of the den began and ended with its name. It was a tall, narrow building, wedged between a casino and an apartment complex off Trop Street. The P and the C of its neon sign flickered cheaply. The exterior reminded N of a pastry shop, all swirls and pastels and glitter.
"Is this Sweetie Street?" N asked.
"No," their driver answered. "We're only a block from St. Maur's." Their driver quickly led them inside the den, a firm hand on both their shoulders. Despite the late hour, the palace was empty, but the air still reeked of smoke and the overwhelming smell of orchids. They walked around cushions and through sheer curtains to the staff room in the back. N tried to figure out exactly what type of New Reign's entertainment was offered here. Potentially all of them. Their trek was long and winding, appropriate for two criminals running from the law. Down the steps, across the basement, through a trapdoor, into a tunnel that stank of sewage. N shivered. They were in the bowels of the city.
"This leads directly to St. Maur's," the woman explained. "We'll take the private elevator to Vianca's suite."
The hair on N's neck rose at the thought of visiting Vianca's personal residence. N whispered to Levi, "Have you been there?"
"No," he said grimly. "I've not yet had that misfortune."
"What do you think she'll do with you? It's not as though you can deal cards anymore." Unlike N, the Phoenix Club knew exactly who Levi was and where to find him.
"I'm not leaving New Reign's," he said firmly. "Vianca would miss me too much."
He elbowed her on the side.
"You would too, right? After all, we're partners in crime now."
She smirked to conceal her embarrassment. She had 1,000 reasons for not wanting Levi to leave the city, the chief one being the way he was looking at her right now, like it was just her and him and no one else. They reached the elevator at the end of the tunnel. The woman ushered them inside, but didn't follow. The lights flickered and the elevator rose with a jerk. N's stomach clenched. They were about to enter the Donna's true lair. She reached for Levi's hand, seeking courage and comfort. At first, he tensed. Then he laced his fingers with hers, sending a nervous spark across her fingertips.
"What do we tell her about the game?" he asked hoarsely. "I'm sure her little spies have told her all about what happened in the House of Shadows. She'll know you were there."
"We tell her that you played." It was safer for Vianca to assume that Levi had won the game. Vianca knew Levi's card abilities. She'd believe that story. If she knew N had played and cheated the game, she'd grow suspicious as to why.
"And if she knows otherwise?" Levi asked, squeezing her hand in warning.
"How could she? She had spies in that room?"
"I'm not sure what the Phoenix Club has told others."
N pressed her free hand to her heart and felt its pounding. "I don't have any other ideas." Her voice hitched in panic. Vianca couldn't know the truth. They needed more time. They needed a better lie. Levi wrapped his arms around her and hugged her reassuringly. She let herself lean into him. She let herself sigh. It had been a long night.
"We face scarier things than her," he said.
"I know." Just as in the phone booth, she was hyper-aware of him behind her, how his chest felt pressed against her back, warm and steadying. It would be easy to turn around, to slide a hand behind his neck, to pull his lips to hers. She held her breath. Certain Levi could feel the racing of her pulse, could hear the desire in her thoughts. Then the elevator doors opened, and Levi and N sprang apart. Vianca was perched on an armchair in a sitting room, her snake eyes leering at them curiously.
"Well, wasn't that a picture?"
She set down her teacup on the end table.
"I found this one in your apartment, Levi. Lucky I found him before the white boots did."
She nodded at Jack across the room, who was several shades of green from being so close to Vianca. They looked like he'd just found the monster beneath his bed.
"I also fetched that girl you've requested."
Lola sat beside Jack. She fiddled anxiously with her harmonica in her lap.
It's been quite a night, hasn't it?
Vianca frowned, scanning Levi.
You've looked better, dear.
I've felt better, he croaked.
Vianca stood and wiggled a bony, ring-covered finger at N.
You first, Miss Salter. You and I need to have a little chat.
Even something called a little chat with Vianca sounded dangerous. N gave the other three a parting, desperate glance before following Vianca into the next room. Levi nodded at her reassuringly, reminding her once again that they had faced worse this night. Don't let them see your fear. Never allow yourself to be lost. Trust no one unless you must. 2 days ago, N had been certain that she was broken beyond repair, yet still her mother's words held their familiar power, winding N back together.
Just not all the way back, she thought as Vianca closed the door behind them.
The ache of missing Lords and her old life would never leave her. All she could do was keep surviving, keep playing. In ways that were both better and worse, N wasn't the same girl who'd arrived, lost and alone, in the City of Sin.
Seance, Vianca said with a hiss. A rather interesting choice of name.
They were in what appeared to be Vianca's parlor. Like the rest of St. Morse, it was furnished in her typical dark, antique fashion, cheap luxury that bordered on gaudy. Each upholstery had a different sort of print. Dozens of glass gemstones dangled from the chandelier above the couch, a piece of costume jewelry set out as decoration. On the largest wall of the room, there was a portrait of what N imagined must have been Vianca's family. Vianca, years younger, though clearly recognizable. A man who didn't smile, and a boy with a princely grin.
I would never have guessed it. I mean, look at you, Vianca said, gesturing at N's body. I imagined you easily discarded.
N was still frozen by the door. She shouldn't be this paralyzed by Vianca, not when she'd already slain one monster tonight. But fear didn't need to be logical to be felt.
Don't just stand there like a wallflower, Vianca snapped. Take a seat.
She patted the spot beside her. Yes, madam. N sat as far away from Vianca as she could without looking rude.
So polite. I wish Levi spoke to me that way.
Vianca's eyes narrowed as she inspected N's face.
You look different.
It took everything in her to conceal her panic.
I haven't slept, of course. It's nearly morning.
Vianca waved her hand dismissively, and N's shoulders relaxed. Levi's contacts had worked, even under the Donna's calculating inspection.
You'll have time for rest after we're done. I need to hear if the rumors are true.
Vianca leaned forward gleefully. Happiness was an emotion that didn't suit Vianca's face.
Is Cedric Torren dead?
N nodded, swallowing. If she closed her eyes, she could still feel his hand around her throat and the repulsive lust in his stare.
And the Chancellor?
Yes, he's dead. Vianca laughed with such mirth that, to N's horror, she reached forward, grabbed N's hand, and shook it in excitement.
The whole city is talking about you, about seance, how you killed them both.
N startled.
But Levi was the one who killed Semper. My Levi?
Vianca echoed, dumbfounded.
How interesting. But the truth hardly matters. What's important is what people say, what the papers are printing. Your seance character is about to become the most notorious criminal we've seen in almost 20 years.
She laughed and gave N's hand a last little shake.
You must tell me all about it.
About the murders? N asked. She fought the urge to look away from the Donna's face. Her many frown lines coiled unnervingly when she smiled.
Yes, and about the House of Shadows.
Despite not having properly rehearsed her words, the lies flowed easily. Vianca was so enraptured, she listened to the entire story without asking questions. When Levi won and the game finished, its rules were over. So he stood, pointed his gun. She swallowed again.
And shot the Chancellor in the head.
Vianca clapped.
Delightful, delightful.
Then the Donna leaned back and studied N a second time. The presence N had felt during the game, her miser abilities, hummed inside her, and she nearly tremored, imagining Vianca's stare peering straight through N's lie.
"This whole act you put on is quite convincing," Vianca purred. "But I'm starting to believe you were corrupted before you ever set foot in this city."
Vianca grabbed N by the chin and peered at her closely, turning her face from side to side. N shuddered and kept her gaze fixed on her lap, in case Vianca noticed the faint outline of the contacts.
"Are you a pearl, or are you a bullet?"
There was an unpleasant truth to Vianca's question. N wished she knew the answer herself. She'd like to consider herself a pearl, but pearls were breakable, and she had to prove herself not to be. Maybe she could be both.
"I have excellent plans for you, my dear," Vianca cooed, relinquishing her grasp on N's face. "But for that, we must talk in the morning. I want to speak with Levi now. Send him in."
"Yes, madam," N responded, more than eager to leave. N slipped out the doors into the other room, and the others snapped to attention. Levi immediately stood and came to her side. "She didn't notice the contacts," N whispered.
"Good. Anything else?"
His hands found her wrists, and he turned her arms over, as if examining her for injuries. "She wants to see you." He eyed the closed door warily. Then he took a deep breath and cracked his neck.
"The night's almost over."
N didn't know if he was reassuring her or himself. Then he molded his face into something expressionless and entered Vianca's parlor. The door closed behind him. N tried not to worry about whatever meeting was unfolding in the other room. Levi had braved Vianca for years before she'd met him, but the way he'd braced himself before walking in, the little bit of fear in his eyes, it almost broke her heart. Because he felt just as trapped as she did, and it was a terrible way to feel. It was too easy to let her feelings slip out of control. It had nearly happened in the payphone booth, in the mall station, in the elevator. The Phoenix Club knew Levi's face now. They'd be hunting for him. N's purple eyes were deadly enough. It wasn't safe to fall for someone with a bounty on his head. Even if she already had. She collapsed on the seat beside Lola. From across the room, Jack tossed her a box of spice cookies. N hadn't even realized how hungry she was. She thanked him and tore into them. "Levi told us," Lola said. Her eyes found N's. "What have you done?" N was too exhausted for words. She wasn't prepared for another round of Lola's paranoid accusations. "I thought we were past this." It wasn't a question, it was a challenge. Lola shifted awkwardly. "We are. I mean, I waited at Luckluster for hours. And I told Vianca to find you. I wanted to make sure you were all right." N handed her a cookie. "Because we're friends." Lola nodded numbly.
"So, N," Jack said. "Does your new power thing mean we're all about to be rich? I'm your friend too."
She might have laughed if she weren't so tired. Since the game, she'd worried about her eyes all night, but somehow Jack had managed to find humor in her dangerous situation. He, too, had seemed wary of her talents before, and maybe he still was, but she also trusted him. Yes, she would also call him a friend. Levi, Jack, and Lola, only they knew her secret. It was now the four of them against the entire city.
"Priority number one, in the morning," he said. "I've always wanted a car, something really sleek, like an Amoretti, in white."
"As if you'll be driving in the near future," Lola said. "You're the second of the street lord who helped kill the Chancellor. Maybe you should talk to Vianca after Levi and beg for her protection too."
Jack blanched.
"I hadn't thought of that."
N tried to come up with something comforting, but found she had nothing to say. Lola was right. Through no fault of his own, Jack had lost his freedom too.
"So I'm a wanted man now, eh? That means I need a street name, and the other seconds have street names."
This time N did laugh. Jack managed to find reasons to smile when there should have been tears.
"The other seconds are scarier than you," Lola told him.
He raised his eyebrows incredulously.
"You're a second. You're not scarier than me."
"Yes, she is," N said, popping a cookie in her mouth.
"I am," Lola agreed. "And N's scarier than Pop, too."
Jack pondered this.
"True."
Then he shot N a teasing smirk.
"I am not scary," N grumbled. "I'm elegant and charming."
"You can be all three," he seeded,
and N decided that was satisfactory. Her guidebook had been right about the City of Sin. It was morally decrepit. It was disgusting and rotten. It was stained black to its very core. But her guidebook had been wrong about one thing. It had been wrong about her. She had entered New Reigns as delicate as glass. She had even chassed. But as it turned out, beneath the dust and shards, something stronger lay within her. A substance less easily broken. She would never forget the ache of her mother's death, but she would also never regret uncovering the truth, about Lords and about herself. Even deep within St. Morse, N could still make out the wail of sirens outside. She could still hear the echoes of engines roaring, timers ticking, and guns firing. Her guidebook claimed the City of Sin was a game. She'd made her first move. Levi.
"Levi, my dear,"
Bianca cooed as Levi entered the Donna's unholy, unfashionable lair.
"Look at you."
She tisked with feigned concern as she examined the bruises on his eye and neck.
"I'm surprised you can walk."
He sat on a chair across from her, and it made him as stiff and uncomfortable as she did.
"Miss Salter has proved to be quite an impressive young woman,"
Bianca mused. He didn't like that smile on her face.
"Yes, she is," he answered carefully.
"Tell me, how does it feel to be a celebrity? You've always wanted that, haven't you?"
Levi had always wanted to be a legend. Maybe he was after tonight. But he was also a target. He leaned back into the seat and winced from the pain in his ribs.
"It could feel better."
"The White Boots have searched your apartment and this casino from top to bottom. They'll be leaving soon. You and the rest of your associates can sleep here tonight in Miss Salter's apartment. I have my men watching every entrance and floor. Starting tomorrow, I've made arrangements for you to stay with a friend of mine named Zula Slick. She lives on the street of the Holy Tombs."
"We've met before," he said dryly.
The idea of bunking with Zula and her unsettling ramblings about shades and curses sounded less than appealing. Though admittedly, he'd live just about anywhere if it meant escaping St. Morse.
"Do you know each other?"
Bianca asked, surprised.
"I know everyone in Old Town."
"Yes, I thought you'd like to stay within your little territory."
She said it as though she'd kept his wishes at heart.
"I've never understood what you see in that place. It's a stain on New Reigns."
"Can we trust Zula?" he asked.
"Oh, yes. You're not the first runaway she's stowed, and I've known her a long time. We run in similar circles."
She smiled in a way that was nearly giddy. In all the years Levi had known Bianca, he'd never seen her smile like that. Her yellowed teeth, her flaky lips. He actually preferred her scowl.
"With Cedric removed, the monarchist party actually has a chance. Only 4 months left until the election. I can't imagine they'll find someone else suitable in time."
"You know I hate politics."
"I'm sorry. Am I boring you? With the Chancellor dead, this is set to be the most important political moment since the Great Street War, and you're at its center. You should be paying attention."
Levi was treading dangerous waters. When Bianca launched into one of her political tirades, there was no interrupting her for hours. It wasn't that she bored him, he just had no desire to review the night's events with her. She was the reason he'd nearly died.
"It's been a long night," he said, hoping that would satisfy.
"Yes, well..."
She lifted her chin higher, and Levi braced himself for whatever insult she would throw at him, as she usually did in each of their conversations.
All of this business with the investment scheme, I didn't know what I